Welcome to the Space Game Junkie podcast. And my microphone is working. Yay! As always, I'm your co-host, Brian. And joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
He who dies with the biggest dice sack wins.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously, you weren't a role player in your younger days because you would know.
I started role playing in college.
Okay.
And so I was late to the game. And
status is determined by how big of a sack of dice you carry around.
Oh, well,
like if you
have
a Crown Royal bag, that means even cooler, right?
Oh, I didn't have a Crown Royal bag. I actually got a big Tupperware thing and filled it with about $50 worth of dice. She's got tons and tons of different types of dice.
Oh, so you were just sort of a starter kit.
Well, yeah, but I guess. It's a huge thing of dice. It's a massive, like hundreds of pieces. Hi, everybody. We are doing something a little different this week, but we are here to talk to Stephen about it's space game related. He's got two space game related pen and paper role playing games that I found out about actually pretty much by accident. I was on the Wing Commander CIC, WCNews.com, which, folks, if you like Wing Commander and you haven't been to this site, they've been around. God, how long have they been around? Like a decade?
15 years. 15. Coming up on 15, yeah.
So long, yeah. They've been around so long. And it's the go-to place for anything. Anything Wing Commander related. So I was on there one day because I have an RSS feed and I visit it regularly and stuff. And they talked about this add-on you were working on for it. I think it was, which one was it? The Enzo? What's it called?
Enyo?
Enyo, yes, they were talking. Yes. I think they were talking about Enyo, and for the Wing Commander role playing game, I'm like, brr. What? Never heard of that. So I, of course, went right to Lulu, found the PDFs, and started reading. And they're big guys. They are big.
Was this like 1,000 pages or so?
The Wing Commander one. Sorry, go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, the Wing Commander one is some. Well, where are my hard copies? It's something like 1,600 pages total between the two volumes of the hard copy. It's like 1,100 pages long in the PDF version. It was actually originally intended to be just a single volume, but it was so big that Lulu wouldn't accept it as a single volume, so I had to split it up there at the end.
It was funny. I was wondering about that because I got the hardcover versions for my birthday, and they're massive, by the way. You can find these over at lulu.com, folks, if you want to go there and look up Stephen Rogers. It's all there. But the books are massive, and it's kind of funny because the first volume is called the player volume, I believe, right? And then the second volume is the game master volume. And it's basically one large book, and the chapters are numerically ordered. It's just they split it in two because it's just so – that thing weighs like 10 pounds. Between the two books, it weighs like 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So how much was it?
How much for the hard copies?
Yeah, the hard copy.
Oh, the Wing Commander ones total between the two volumes are about $70. And the Starflight one is about $34 to get those printed. And they are nice. I'd honestly never heard of Lulu before this. So I was a little, you know, I was a little like, okay, I don't know who these people are. I don't know what the quality is going to be like, you know, when you get something like this. But they're really, really well done. I mean, they feel really solid. It's good quality paper.
Is it like nice glossy pages or?
They're a little glossy. They're not too thick, so it turns well. It doesn't bend the spine too much. But yeah, they're really, really nice. I really dig them. So once I found out about this, I like just started reading and it took me a while to read them because they're big. I mean, I usually don't spend that much time in the can, but because of these.
Yeah. You know, like when your legs go numb, you've been there too long.
Yeah. Like I can't feel my foot. Anymore.
Especially if you got a 5-pound book sitting on your lap. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was great reading because not only do you have these great RPG systems, but there's just so much detail about the universes as well, which I want to talk to you about, like where you got all this detail and everything, because it's fascinating. So let's start at the beginning. When did you start working on these, and how did you get the idea to create them?
Well, let's see, the very beginning. First of all, these the Starflight one came first.
Okay.
And it's not – that actually was not the very first RPG I'd ever written, the RPG system. I had it's a very, very long story if I tell it completely in full. But basically the year or two before I started working on Starflight, I had been working on a different RPG, one that has actually involved some of the independent writing that I was doing. I was actually creating another whole other universe for myself, which I call the Anacostia universe. It's based after a main space station that's in that universe. It's another space opera type. And, you know, I based that RPG off of the third edition of Dungeons & Dragons. You won't find that anywhere else. It took me about 2 years to finish working on it. You know, had all my species and all the core rules and stuff like that, and got done with it, looked at it, played with it around a little bit, and, you know, I was like, oh, this is okay. But it plays like D&D in space, you know, and you expect that because it's based off of third edition D&D. So earlier, I was interested in seeing if it would withstand a change in scenery. And, you know, I had recently come across the Starflight 3 project, which, you know, was going on real strong there about, you know, 99 through about 2003. It kind of died out after that.
That was, oh my God, sorry, but that was like, What do you know what happened there? Because they didn't really explain why the project just ground to a halt.
My understanding of that was that it was due to some creative differences between the three guys who got started with that. I guess that was who was that? I've gotten there in the RPG actually. Brian Linton, Adam Schillinger, and Patrick Mead. Those were the three guys who started Starflight 3. As a project, got the permission from Rob McConnell and Binary Systems and all that. They got it started. They got going good with it. They had a lot of code build up. But one thing they never actually did they wrote down anywhere in any one single spot was their design document. And, you know, they didn't write down the design document in any one spot. It was all handled through emails between these three guys. And then I think it was somebody suggested they do the whole thing as 3D. And that was pretty much the linchpin that happened. And all three of them left all at once. There were no notes left behind or anything like that. And, you know, everybody was kind of here left, okay, what does this piece of code do? What does this do? What does this do? Nobody knows what this does. And all their experienced programmers were gone at that point. And that was about the time I came onto the scene. You know, I came across Starflight 3 because I was looking for the original Starflight 1 and Starflight 2. See if I could find it online, because these were games I owned when I was back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I had recently, you know, about 2003, 2004, I had just then discovered DOSBox and I wanted to play the games. So.
Oh, thank God for DOSBox, right?
DOSBox is awesome.
Oh, so awesome.
Yep.
Big love for DOSBox around here.
Oh, yeah. Many a childhood memory we lived thanks to DOSBox.
And it's gotten so stable. Like, I remember the first time I tried to run TIE Fighter on it, and it was just chug, chug. It was like 3 frames per second, chug, chug. Mm-hmm. And this is with the 320, you know, graphics even. And now it runs it beautifully. So yep. I love those guys because they just keep improving upon the thing.
I've actually been playing TIE Fighter of late.
Really?
Yeah, just for the heck of it, found a patch that would let you run it on Windows 7. So, and I had the collector's CD-ROM edition of that already. Anyway, I had that one, but not X-Wing. But I always kind of like TIE Fighter better. I don't know.
Well, it's a better game. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you know, Dark Side of the Force and all that. It's good to be the bad guys. You know?
I know, right? Who thought it would be so? Like when I first heard about it,
as good as dumb. Yes. Okay.
No, when I first heard about it, I'm like, why would I want to be the bad guys? And then you start playing, and you're like, oh, yeah, this isn't so bad. This is great, actually. Down with the rebels.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, because the bad guys in the movie, they're always just the mustache-twisting villain, and you don't really get to see behind the curtain. And then you find out that they have motivations other than just like, hey, let's go out and be evil. So,
yeah,
you know, that's what's always been interesting to me about the bad guy.
inspecting the ships and stuff, yeah. Science maintain law and order, yes.
Yeah, and inspecting lots of cargo for...
I was talking about Starflight. What?
So we got sidetracked.
Where, what was your question again?
We were basically like how the project got started.
Right. Okay. Well, it was, you know, it was when I got involved with the Starflight 3 project. There was a guy on the forums who was interested in creating a D20 RPG, and his name was Jason Horner. He and I started, you know, talking back and forth because, you know, I built the Anacostia RPG, and I said, hey, I've got this system. I'm kind of interested to see if it would withstand a change of scenery. Let's see what we could do about adapting this to Starflight. And that started, you know, we started talking back and forth between the two of us and, you know, thinking about how certain aspects and mechanics would work, like how would training work, how would combat work, this sort of thing. See what we could do to adapt what we had.
About what year and, was this?
This would have been about 2005.
Okay.
In fact, the exact date, I can give you the exact date, was June 2nd, 2005. That was the day I started work in earnest on the Starflight role-playing game. I know that because, you know, the Starflight 3 site has been down for the last couple, for, you know, about a year. I just happened to check this morning and it was all back up. So I was like, hey, I can talk about that on the podcast tonight. So, and the very first thing that I worked with was actually the prices of trade goods in the game. Well, I was thinking that once we got into Starflight, we started, you know, saying, okay, this is going to work. This isn't going to work. Let's change it. Let's start rearranging. You know, this is a project I got started with, thinking maybe a year, maybe a year and a half to finish up. My log show, it was April 6th, 2010, whenever I finally sent the proofread versions off to Lulu. So it took 5 years to write the Starflight game.
Wow.
Yeah. Five years worth of work. And
so how did it make the transition between being a D20 to a D% or D100?
Well, that was actually Jason's suggestion. He got to fiddling around with it, and we were trying to create something that was actually had kind of the same feel as the original Starflight game, you know, and trying to make that compatible with something like D&D, where you've got like six attributes, and, you know, who knows how many skills and stuff like that. Trying to make them compatible with one another, he came to a determination pretty quickly that they just weren't going to work. And he suggested, let's try a D percentile system. And I said, oh, well, okay, I guess we could go ahead and change that around. I don't know how that would work with you know, trying to make it a Starflight type system. That actually worked out pretty well. We were able to change, I was able to take the, you know, the 250 point, you know, scale. For the different attributes that you have in Starflight, you know, like science, you can have up to 250 points, and
right,
engineering and all that. Just basically turn it into a dice modifier. And so every 10 points that you have in a certain attribute, it turns into an extra point that you get on the dice. So, you know, and then that gets compared to a hit difficulty. You know, and that's basically the way things work in D&D, is that you have your dice, skills and attributes modify that die roll, and you try to be a certain number. And yeah, that actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, since we're on that topic. How much work was it to convert the RPG system in Starflight to a pen and paper RPG system that used dice? I mean, you just described what sounds like some of it, but I'm sure more work must have been involved.
There was a great deal, a lot more work done. First of all, finding all the information out was tricky. You know, we had things that people had printed out and, you know, put on the internet over the years, stuff from various, you know, clue books and stuff like that. But of course, that stuff's only so reliable. There was another member on the Starflight 3 boards, a guy by the name of Stephen Weirds, who runs a website, starflight.com, starflt.com.
Oh, yeah, I know that site.
Yeah, that's his site.
Oh.
He actually cracked open the hex code and was able to, between him and Jace, they were able to pull out a lot of the information straight from the game, from Starflight 1 and Starflight 2. So we had all that information all together, and basically just kind of reset, kind of set everything in the game. You know, like, you know, like a class one laser does 90 points of damage in the RPG. The reason why it does that is because that's how much it did in the original games. We tried to be as true to the original games as we possibly could. And a lot of that information was actually in the games themselves. So, yeah, pulling that information out was fun. It took about a month or two of work to do all that.
So is that how in the game, the original video game, is that how things were organized, like as far as lasers and other just equipment in general? It was like on a class level thing? So you'd have like a class one laser, class two.
Yeah. Let me see. That was all in it's all in chapter 6. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, because that was the thing that I noticed in reading through this, is like a lot of RPGs, they'll have like an equipment section, right? And they have like big pictures of the guns and like some sort of a description of, you know, like some made up history or whatever, some just like flavor text about a weapon. And then they give like stats for it or whatever. So, you know, it'd be like, well, your M16, you know, combat rifle is, you know, manufactured by, you know, Mattel toy division. And, you know, and it shoots this type of thing and a little bit of history. And then, oh, yeah, and it does X D6 of damage or whatever. But for the weapons in here, it's pretty much just like, well, you know, a Mark I laser does this and a Mark II laser does that. But it's not really into, like the cultural aspect of it. You know, it's like, you know, I know that I have a Mark II laser, but it's kind of like you leave it up to the player to determine anything else about it.
Yeah. I do tend to leave a lot of decisions up to the GM and to the players, as far as specifics, like, you know, manufacture and stuff like that. But that's the way it was in the original Starflight game. Of course, you know, this dating back to 1986, you know, and this game in its entirety was fit on 2 low density floppy disks, so it couldn't have been more than, you know, a meg and a half total. So you didn't really have all that that much additional space for like flavor text and that sort of thing. So I just kind of left it that way to try and capture some of that feel maybe a little bit. As far as the information is concerned, though, I mean, that is pulled straight from the hex code. So, like, a class 2 laser will do 210 points of damage. You know, that's how much it actually did in the game.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, like, if you get a game like Star Frontiers or, you know, Traveler, you know, the other space opera games, and so much of the size of the book is actually devoted to art and to like flavor text stuff and that, and you've got like 1,000 pages of stuff here, and it's kind of minimal art and minimal flavor stuff. It's all explanation of mechanics. So there's a heck of a lot of beef here, you know, not a lot of bun. There's a lot of beef. So that's, I find that pretty interesting though, because it's like if you did expand it out and like, you know, dress it up like the stuff that you normally find, you know, hardcover on the shelf at the hobby shop, then the thing would be like maybe 5,000 pages. So it's,
I was trying to cram as much information about the universe as I could into a single volume. And, you know, that's getting to be an increasingly difficult job. I mean, just around here, there weren't not many people that I know who remembered Starflight from 1986, you know? So part of it was I had to try and indoctrinate people to the universe. I know that my playtester didn't. The person I normally have who helps me playtest my games, a guy by the name of Mike Andrews, he didn't have a clue what Starflight was before we got started with it. Of course, then he got in, you know, I kept on describing it to him, and he said, okay, let's go ahead and do this. Yeah, let's play. Yeah, let's get it. I demand that you get an adventure going. I was like, Mike, I still have 3 more chapters to write.
Well, that's the fascinating thing about it. Because the Starflight universe, even though, like you said, it was on – both games were pretty much on 2 low-density floppies, if I recall. Mm-hmm. And yet they put so much in there.
They did.
And yet they left so much to the imagination. And if I liked when I was reading the book, it's like you captured that same feeling. Like you put a lot in there. But at the same time, how it all works out in a game is up to the player, which is awesome. And it's kind of funny because the Wing Commander RPG, it's like you want to add all this flavor text. Well, now you've got this 1,200-page tome with three expansions. So you're that's kind of what
and
you're doing.
And a fourth one on the way, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's the one that you're working on right now?
That isn't called an Elegy for Savar. Is actually the first three expansions are, you know, one's an individual mission. The other two are little small campaigns. Elegy is actually going to be a full-on campaign setting.
Oh,
so I've got that set in the Epsilon Sector just before the events of Wing Commander Prophecy, the last one on the set where we meet the bugs for the first time, the Nephilim. It's going to be centered on an event that's mentioned in the Prophecy manual I forget what this guy's name is. He's a Kilrathi pirate. His name is Bloodeye. Basically, you're going to be working for his group. That's if you follow the main campaign. Now, I'm trying to set it up to where you don't necessarily have to play that campaign. You can just use the setting if you want to play with it. And I'm hoping to capture a lot of the feel of Privateer with that one.
Ooh, nice. And wait, is this one a little more Kilrathi focused, or am I thinking of another one?
This one is the one that's going to be Kilrathi focused.
Right.
If it all turns out as I intend, you know, I've already got the all the places set up. I've got all the encounter tables set up already. Right now, I'm working on ships, and gonna have pretty much a mix of everything. I'm gonna have a little bit of Landrike in there, some of the stuff from Wing Commander 1, some from Wing Commander 2. I've even got a couple of them. There are a couple ships in there that are actually going to be up and coming in the Star Citizen universe, just kind of making a little bit of crossover there.
That's funny.
Yeah. I figured why not. You know, I mean, for 5 minutes back in 2010, every Wing Commander fan on the planet thought that Chris Roberts was going to make Wing Commander again.
Yeah. So in your lore, how do you explain away the naked Kilrathi in the movie? Is that some disease that they had? Or
I don't think it covers the movie. Am I right about that?
It does not.
Yeah.
As far as the Kilrathi in the movie, I refer to Star Soldier, which is the manual for Wing Commander Arena. Basically just says they're a type of breed of Kilrathi. They're hairlesses. That's probably the best explanation I go with, and that's fine with me.
Wow, there's actually
I've seen those hairless cats, man. They're kind of evil looking, just all on their own.
Yeah.
So wait, there's something actually in one of the manuals. I should know this. There's something in one of the manuals that mentions hairless Kilrathi?
Yes, there is. Wing Commander the one for the Xbox back in 2007.
Oh, that one. I've never played that one. I didn't have an Xbox.
I haven't played that one either.
Neither's anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, did anyone play that one?
There's one guy.
There are people on the CIC site who have played it. Actually, played it recently, as far as I know.
Wow!
Oh. I've always kind of wanted to play it, but my understanding is that, you know, it's so much different from the other ones that it's really
it's different as Wing Commander 1 and Galaxians. I think.
I can't imagine playing Wing Commander on a console. I mean, when I first got my PS3, I saw that there was a PSN store version of Wing Commander 4, which is my favorite one. I'm like, oh my god, Wing Commander 4 on a TV, that would be great. No. Not really, because it didn't use the analog sticks.
Yep.
And so that was awful.
Yep.
I wanted to cut my neck with the controller, which would have been smart.
Commander 4 was hard enough with the regular joystick.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, so RPG design-wise, did you have any kind of balance issues with this thing, or because you were drawing from the source material of what was actually in the game, it was already pre-balanced?
For the Wing Commander one?
Yeah, like as far as combat and stuff, because it's like I've written a role-playing game myself like about 20 years ago, and it was a science fiction thing too, but some problems that I had, like I went with a D20 system, but I didn't really like, I've always been really bothered in like Dungeons and Dragons where you have like a dagger does a D4 and then you get somebody that's got a couple levels on them and they've got like 40 hit points. So it's like at best, I have to stab you about 15 times before you feel it, you know, and it's just like, it's ridiculous. So I actually kind of lifted the thing. There was this old role-playing game called Cult. and you would have a damage bonus to a weapon, and then it was like a d20 roll, and then it gave ranges about, you know, if you rolled like a 1 to a 5, it's going to be a minor wound, and if you roll like, you know, a 5 to a 12, then it's a medium wound, and that kind of thing. So then you have like how many light wounds, how many medium wounds you can take, and if you take more light wounds than you have capacity for, like it would be 4. Your fifth light wound is actually a medium, you know, it kind of promotes up. And I tried doing that, but I found out that my combat system was so freaking deadly that nobody really liked playing the game because it was kind of like realistic. It's like, oh, I got shot. Oh, well, I'm out. You know, that's the end for me. I'll be laying on the ground twitching. You know, so it was kind of like trying to find a balance between keeping it fun and keeping it not be silly, you know, where everybody could be a bullet sponge.
I kind of on the character scale combat level, I did kind of leave it to where it was, you know, there were different types of different types of weapons you can buy, different strengths. You know, you get a halfway decent, you get a light weapon, yeah, you might be able to take a hit or two from that thing before you bite the bucket, bite the bullet. Get a stronger weapon against you, no, you can take only one hit and you're dead. I think that's the balance there was that the stronger weapons, of course, cost more and, you know, might not necessarily be an effect that you wanted to have happen.
Yeah, well, like on a class for, let's say like a laser, yeah. And then you got class like 1 to 10 or whatever. What is actually like something that you would wear on your hip as a pistol? You know, is that like class 1, 2? Like class 3 is a little too big for that, or is that all ambiguous?
I've kind of deliberately left that ambiguous. Generally, you know, if it's something like one-handed, if it's a one-handed weapon, then that's generally something that you would probably wear on your hip. And that's, like for the laser guns, that would be like the first through fifth class. You know, and the fifth class laser can do enough damage to kill a person outright. It can also still take a hit or two. Depending on your armor and stuff like that, there is armor and shielding in the game you can wear, and that helps mitigate some of that damage, of course.
Yeah. So how does your armor work? Is it ablative armor where the armor takes the first X points of damage and then it goes through to the player, or does it have like a reduction but stuff will go through it? Like, let's say, you know, it takes the first 10 points off, but then anything else blows through.
It's been a while since I've worked with the character scale stuff. I think, if I remember right, the armor has so much hit points of its own. Whenever you get hit, it will stop a certain amount. And then beyond that certain amount, it will pass on damage to the player as non-lethal hit points. And it's possible to get your armor blown off. If it has to absorb too much damage. I think that's how that worked. It's been a while since I've worked with the character scale stuff.
Yeah, what's the stuff that you're in development with now? Is it like the spaceship stuff mainly, or
spaceship stuff? Yeah, predominantly is spaceships. Building some new stuff for LLG. Like I'm going to be building some craft for the Ferekin people from special operations. No, it wasn't special operations. It was Secret Missions 2, I think. The second of the Wing Commander 1 expansions. I can never remember the title exactly because they're all.
Oh, that was Special Operations 2, wasn't it, or something? Secret Missions or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. The Ferekin people. They're gonna be in LLG. They're gonna have their own ships.
Nice.
They're gonna be, you know, pretty awesome. Working on those. Still need to come up with stats for them. And then, of course, you know, converting some of this stuff and rebalancing. You know, like, I had to bring the original Hornet up to snuff to where it could still be competitive, I guess. You know, because it's, you know, it's 35 plus years since the original Wing Commander. So, you know, but the Landrak's still using them. So they kind of have to be, you know, halfway decent as a fighter. And they're still outclassed, of course, but.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jim.
Oh, well, I noticed in the book, you've got, like, races that were in the Wing Commander cartoon and
yes.
Know, stuff that was mentioned just very briefly in the game and that. So does that mean, like, as a research project, you had to, like, find and sit through every episode of the cartoon and furiously take notes? and then like play the games end to end and try to take notes of like every cutscene that happened and all the dialogue and everything.
It's not necessarily everything, but yeah, I did have to sit through and watch the cartoons. At the time, the cartoons were freely available from the CIC website. Now, of course, they've been redistributed through Amazon recently on DVD, and you can go ahead and buy them. So you can't actually get them off of the CIC website anymore, but you know, you can't. They are still available. There was that. I also had to sit through the original Bane novels. You know, all the William R. Fortune novels. We went ahead and did a complete read through of those just to take notes and stuff. Significant events that happened, of course, Freedom Flight by Mercedes Lackey. That was the very first one. Had to do that one too. Later on, went ahead and did the Peter Tellett novels, the ones that from the movie, because I was interested in some of the information about the Pilgrims. And that was actually after the game went to print. So that I do have a very small number of inconsistencies, as it turns out. I think maybe like I had the name of their ship wrong. You know, that's really been the only thing I've seen wrong there. The RPG doesn't completely discount the movie, but it doesn't really include it either, because I just simply didn't have that kind of information available to me about the movie.
But basically, role playing game at this point is kind of the definitive source book for all the Wing Commander like background material. And like who's who and what the races are and their motivations and that. So
it's fairly definitive. I also would suggest the WCpedia site, you know, wcnews.com/WCpedia. That actually has some of the details that I glossed over. And it's a pretty good resource of information. I used it an awful lot whenever I was building the RPG.
And I just wanted to say, I read through all of the Wing Commander and Starflight one, and well, I have a couple questions. One, I mean, I was reading, you know, how to play the game, and it's to me reading it, it seems complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of stuff, but how did it play test? Like, how does it play out? Did it play much more efficiently than it might seem to me just by reading the book? Because the book is like, oh my god, I'll admit.
Yeah, and I kind of want to lump into that because I was going to ask something that's kind of similar. But mm-hmm. I look at the systems that are in here and where it's like, okay, I have a skill. Well, first off, I'm going to have a dice roll, and that's a percentage. And then there's a difficulty target that I have to hit with that. And then there's also modifiers both ways, right? So like if I have skill that modifies my percentage chance to succeed, then I add that number. And then if whatever I'm trying to apply this skill to, say it's a person that's actively resisting, then it's going to have their modifiers subtracted from it. And, you know, and then if you have like attribute bonuses and things like that, that's going to get added in on both sides. And that, and it just seems like, boy, there's going to be a lot of math go on for like every time somebody pulls the trigger. So does that kind of slow things down, or once you kind of know what those are going to be, then combat speeds along? Because that was another problem I had in my game, was like the more reality I tried to build into it, it was like it really kind of chugged the game. So finally I ended up like jettisoning about 3/4 of what I had for modifiers and stuff.
It does take some getting used to with the system, and there is a lot of math involved, but I find that if you can get a lot of it taken care of ahead of time, that combat actually moves pretty quickly. I know we did some practice dogfights prior to the release of WCRPG back in, when was that, about 2013. A floor member on the CIC site and I, we sat down and we actually did a couple of combat missions, played through a mission from Wing Commander 3, and we actually did it as the RPG. And you know, once we had all the numbers crunched, we were able to sit down and say, okay, the Blair is going to go ahead and attack this Drawfee. Let's roll the dice. Okay, we check the table. Yes, he hits. Okay. And then how many times does he hit? He hits 6 times. Okay. Can he go boom? And we got to the point where we were able to do, you know, two or three scenarios in an hour. So it does take some getting used to. But once you are used to the combat system, once you're used to the way it works, it actually goes along pretty smoothly, in my experience anyway.
My next thing I wanted to say, I mean, I wish I had a group that I can play this with. I wish I could like try this out, but I think I read the chapters on vehicles in both books maybe twice each, because you went into so much loving detail on every vehicle you put in there. I was blown away, honestly. How did you get all? I mean, was it through various sources like you were talking about, like the books and the show and everything? How'd you get all that detail for these things, for the ships?
A lot of it was remembering the games, and going to WCpedia, finding all the information out. I compared a lot of source material, actually, because I have claw marks. I have stuff from, I have the original blueprints. I have information from the CIC website. Gathered up all that information, said, okay, let's see what this, we got all the information. This is what this fighter can do. Okay, let's go ahead and see what I've got in my engine that'll make it do it. About the only thing there that, about the only thing in either engine that was 100% on my own was the accessories, and I was just coming up with stuff. Okay, this accessory will let this craft do that. That was just pretty much stuff that came up as it was necessary. But yeah, that took a lot of research. Trying to remember, I don't exactly remember how long I was working specifically just on ships, but it was a while.
Yeah, I can imagine, because like I said, it's probably one. It felt like it's one of the larger sections of either book. Mm-hmm. Was the ships.
And one of the real big things that I wanted to be able to do with the RPGs is I wanted the system to be robust enough to where if somebody wanted to create their own thing, that they could turn around and create their own thing and actually have it set, you know, in that universe. I mean, if you want to sit there and take the Battlestar Galactica and just play it in the with the Wing Commander system, you can. There's literally enough stuff there that you can go ahead and take, you know, Galactica and sit it in the system and play it that way. It'd kind of be a weird crossover, but yeah, you could do it, you know, or Serenity or any of the other sci-fi stuff. That was a goal that I had with the RPGs, and I think I did a pretty good job with it. I don't think I covered everything, but
do you have like a vehicle construction system in here so that you know if I want to just convert something over, then you know there's like some sane rules to follow, or is it just kind of up to the GM to say, well, this is what I think these ought to be, and plug some numbers in?
Chapter 6.2. I think it's both of them actually. Has the rules for creating and modifying vehicles from scratch. And then the three sub-chapters that follow that talk about the various chassis that you can build a vehicle on. Then there's one that talks about, you know, who's using it, can be like if it's going to be a commercial ship or if it's going to be military. And then the one after that is a listing of all the equipment that you can put on a vehicle. And then the next chapter, there's the same thing again, except that's specifically for capital ships. For you know, like battlecruisers and destroyers and stuff like that, starships, and it has a whole separate list.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's a full system there for creating this stuff.
It's Jim. It's marvelous. It's absolutely. Okay, if you're a spaceship nut like I am, it's almost porn. Really, it's almost it's almost like a romance novel, but for spaceships. You know, it's just that crazy. It's that, like, oh, God.
So how does spaceship combat, since that's what you've been working on lately, does spaceship combat play out? Is it sort of an abstracted thing, you know, where you have an option to just say, well, you know, as the GM, you guys are here and the enemies are about this range, so, you know, start rolling dice? Or is it actually more toward a hex or a square grid kind of thing, and you know, would it bring miniatures in real easy?
I actually have it set up to where you could do either or. I have rules in there that if you want to use a hex grid, you could. Abstract Rig, you could. If you want to play it with miniatures, you could. And if you want to play it like a first edition, you know, like Final Fantasy One, you could do it that way. You know, you could do it where everybody resolves their stuff at the same time. You could do it where everybody does it in turns. The thing is that I've left that as a GM level decision, where the GM can sit down with the player and say, let's go ahead and set up how would you guys like to go ahead and set up a combat for the campaign, and say, okay, well, we'll do it this way, we can do it this way, we'll do it this way. And once everybody's agreed on that, you know, those are the rules you use. Okay. And so it can be very complex, it can be very simple.
So whenever combat's playing out, because characters, you know, you have X number of hit points and then you fall over. But as far as ships, you know, do you get into the complexity of like how systems get damaged, and you know, you could lose this, but you still have that, and you know, as long as life support still works and there's a couple points of hull left, we're okay.
Yeah, you do get into that. You know, once you get past, I think it's concurrent with armor damage that. Okay, you take so many hits here, you do get you wind up taking some systems damage in the process. And you can lose your guns, you can lose your missiles, shields, and all that. I even have a rule set up where if you critical botch, your guns jam, you can't use them at all. Or it usually just is one gun at a time on that one, because you know, because it kind of gets sucky if you can't shoot at the other guy. But that is in there, you can use some of your actions to affect some minor repairs during combat if you have to.
Wait, how do you do that? How do you do repairs? What you said.
It's an action. I think it's
So you're basically like Grig back there taking out circuit boards and stuff and trying to jury rig stuff to fix it.
Well, that, and you can also have like repair droids and stuff like that. I remember those from Privateer that you could buy a repair droid and it would be sitting there working while you were still getting hammered by Kilrathi. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you have anybody that's actually generating like modules for this, you know, adventures and whatnot? Or because I'm wondering, like, where if I was going to GM this, like, where would I jump in? You know, it's like, oh well, all of you guys meet at a bar, and one of you happens to own a ship, you know, or what? Or I mean, you could go. It would naturally lend itself toward a military campaign, right? And that way, everybody gets a fighter for free from the government. You know, but where do you draw from as far as like, well, we do things other than fly fighters, you know, and where else do characters go to get into trouble?
So far, I haven't really done too much along non-military lines. Elegy is hoping to be able to rectify that with Elegy, to where you can play as a civilian. You know, you can go try and, you know, get your grandpa's old Tarsus out of the scrap heap. the three modules that are currently existing, you got Prelude, you got Enyo, and you got Vespis. Those three are all military. Prelude actually includes a light version of the rules, so you can just kind of jump in and grab that whole thing. Same with Enyo and Vespis. I'm still working on modules.
So this new privateer-ish module, are there going to be ships from Privateer, like the Orion and the Centaurion and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Yep. I love those ships.
Paradigm.
I even love the – what was the first one? Was that the Tarsus? Was that what the first
Tarsus,
one was?
Yeah, the Tarsus was the very first one.
Yeah.
I think that one is not in.
I have a soft spot for that ship. I really do.
It's a good ship.
Everyone else hates it, but I don't know. It got me out of a lot of scrapes before I could afford something better and just discarded it. But now that sounds odd. Now you're not including anything from Privateer 2, right? Please tell me.
No. Now, caveat there, Privateer 2 material is in WCRPG because, you know, it is
– I know.
There are people there who do consider it part of the Wing Commander universe, so I did go ahead and add it. So you can do Privateer 2 if you want to in the WCRPG, but you know, nothing like that in LG.
Thank God, because Privateer 2 is terrible. I think anyway.
It's been a long time since I've played it. I just remembered, you know, the thing I remember about Privateer 2, and this may have just been the system setup I had, is that whenever the pirates were sitting there insulting you you know, trying to kill you. You know, they were talking with a male voice. Whenever they died, they always screamed out like a girl. They screamed out in a woman's voice. You know, they were like, "Aah!"
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, I kind of asked that question a couple of years ago on the CIC board. You know, why was that? And I think it was some, I don't remember who said it, but it was somebody said, extremely good shooting.
Nice. I actually was playing some of it recently, and wow, it's just bad. Though I'm told the deluxe edition is better. Yeah.
I'll take your word for that, because it's been a long time since I've touched Privateer 2.
Yeah, don't. I mean, it's on GOG now, so you can get it if you want it for like $6, but yeah, let's not kid ourselves. It's not good.
I did get it. Probably wait for a sale. You can get most of them, all the Wing Commander games on GOG now, I think.
Yeah, they're all the PC ones are on there now, and I'm not sure if they all have all of their content packs. I think they do. But I'm not 100%. Like they didn't at first. Like Privateer didn't have Righteous Fire, and the Wing Commander 1 and 2, they didn't have their mission discs. I don't think at first, but I think they've been added since. There's some weird licensing thing or something. But yeah, they're all on there now. Armada, Academy, they're all on there now. Even the weird ones.
Even the weird ones.
So you actually played, going back to Starflight a bit, because I don't talk to a lot of people who played the original. Like you said, it's hard to find people who played the original. You played it when it came out?
A few years after it came out. I was actually introduced to it by my dad's boss at the time.
Oh, wow.
He had a kid who played the game. It was actually 1989, the first time I played the original Starflight. You know,
I played it.
I was in a mall in Wichita, Kansas the week later, and the Radio Shack was demoing Wing Commander 2. I'm not Wing Commander 2, Starflight 2. So it was a few years after the original Starflight came out that I finally played it. But yeah, it was the original PC version, glorious CGA color.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got it. I got it at a Radio Shack. That's where I got it, too.
Yep.
With my Tandy 1000EX. Oh, remember Tandy.
Yeah, Radio Shack used to be, you know, the place to get video games, man.
It was.
How the mighty have fallen. Now I can get a cell phone case. I think Radio Shack was over, man, when the vacuum tube tester cabinet left, then they were dead to me.
Like, apparently you can't even get, like, those little component little thingies anymore. You can't, like, if you needed a specific thing to tie these two cables together and have them go into one jack, you know, you can go to the Radio Shack, and they had it, but apparently now they don't even do that. Apparently it's all, like, cell phones and iPads now.
I miss the old days.
I do. No, I'm with you, man. I do. Okay, this is going to sound weird. There's something about the smell of those old computer stores. Like a mix of plastic and cardboard that just came together. Beardy old men with those big boxes
that
those old games came in. There's just something magical. Or if you're EA, like Starflight, those little thin record, like 45 record size, whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
Like every EA game came in one of those, didn't they, back in the day? Like just about everyone?
Pretty much, yeah.
When EA actually made good stuff. Yeah. So you've done Starflight, you've done Wing Commander. If you had your druthers, what would be the next classic space game you would convert?
I had strongly considered doing an RPG for the Star Control universe.
Ooh!
I had strongly considered that, but my wife has made it abundantly clear the next one I do, I get paid. That's the thing about these ones, is that I have made exactly no dollars.
Really?
On either one of these two games, yeah. It was kind of a condition for their release, you know, because I could go ahead and print them, post them, do whatever I wanted to with them as long as I didn't make a profit on them, which is why the PDFs are free. Those are 100% free download. Anybody can get them anytime they want to from lulu.com. But, yeah, the next one, I would like to do Star Control. I might also would really, if I could, maybe one of these days do one for Star Citizen.
Ooh.
But yeah, that one I'm going to have to get a little bit more information about before I can even touch it. And actually, I did get some preliminary work done on the Star Control one, but until my wife caught me at it, and that was the end of that. Yeah.
So is this like your primary job, making RPGs?
It is not. I work for the University of Oklahoma. That's my paying job.
I see.
This is my hobby, actually, is the RPGs. Work on them on my breaks.
It's kind of a fascinating hobby.
Yeah.
Do you teach or what?
What
do you teach?
I work at the library there. My official title is the catalog maintenance supervisor. Basically, which means I have to, you know, make sure everything gets to where it's going.
Oh, so you're like master of the Dewey Decimals.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
The Dewey Decimal.
Dewey Decimal. LC.
Did they keep the card catalog out of a sense of nostalgia, or are they all gone?
They kept it up until about 6 months ago.
Wow, that recently?
That recently, yeah. Well, it's because they have a bunch of people there didn't trust their online catalog for good reason, because, you know, nobody really knew how to work it. In the early going, so it was actually considered a more accurate reflection of our early catalog than the online catalog. And we got a new dean not too long ago, and you know we've for 10 years of the time I've been there. I mean, they say don't mess up the card catalog, don't mess up the card catalog, don't mess up the card catalog. He said comes in there, he says pitch it, and poof, it went away.
So do you have to avoid stores like Barnes & Noble? Because if you go in there and you see like a book that's out of order on the shelf, you just get like OCD and cringe.
No, I don't have to do anything like that.
It's not his responsibility. So
shelving is not my responsibility. No, just the catalog is. So
now you maintain the online catalog.
Yes.
All right. Yep. It's funny, like the last time I was at the L.A. Public Library – a year or so ago, they still had a bunch of those old card catalogs there, even though they have a fully computerized catalog now.
You know, a lot of libraries do keep them for the sake of nostalgia, and for the older researchers. You know, there's some people who can't handle all that new fandangled technology.
But you're at a university, so you probably don't have that issue.
We have it to an extent. We still have folks who try to look up stuff on microforms. You know, like microfilm, microfiche, you know, things that have been obsolete for 30 years. We still have collections and people who still try to use them. Yeah.
That's weird. The stream, like, just went to – oh, there it goes. It just, like, stopped. That's weird. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's acting funny. I don't know if it's my internet, but it just, like, stopped for a short time. That was weird. Sorry, folks. The stream is acting strange tonight. Apologize for that. I don't know what to do about it. But So I asked you about the licensed one. So I guess your next RPG is going to be an original then.
Yeah. If I can't do Star Control or Star Citizen, I'll probably go ahead and try to do another one of Anacostia. I have made a few changes to that universe over the years. The second edition was really kind of clunky. I've learned a lot over the last 10, 11 years or so.
Wait, I'm sorry. What is it called?
Anacostia.
Anacostia?
Yeah. Yeah, the story behind that is I got the name from the Washington, D.C. metro system, actually. So there is a railway station there called Anacostia along the Anacostia River. And I always kind of liked the sound of the name of it. And I had this big space station I designed back in like 1993, and that was the name I eventually gave it. But that's my own stuff. And if I did another RPG, it'd probably be based on that system. It'd probably be based on that universe.
Yeah. I'm not finding it on Google anywhere. You won't find it
anywhere. The site that stuff was originally on was on GeoCities. And,
wow!
Yeah, that's how old it is. I would be doing some significant revisions there as well.
Oh wow!
So what old RPGs have you played as far as like the spacey stuff. I mean, everybody's played D&D, right? So
pretty much everybody's done D&D. Second edition, the West End version, Star Wars. I've done that one.
Is that the D6 one still?
Yeah, that's the D6 one, yeah.
Okay.
I've done some of some stuff with GURPS, with the space module, done some of that. Those pretty much have been the main ones as far as sci-fi RPGs go. I did take a look at the third edition Star Wars one. That was the one that's basically, you know, D&D third edition, but set in the Star Wars universe, you know, D20 based.
Mm-hmm.
I have done that one. I have looked at, not necessarily an RPG, but I've taken a look at Battlefleet Gothic, played that a little bit. In fact, the whole combat system that I based, the start of the combat system for the Starflight system, was based on an idea I had to try and be able to play Battlefleet Gothic without the models. Because I had the rules, but not any of the models. So, yeah. Didn't want to shell out that much money for, you know, a little dinky fleet, especially if nobody was going to play with me.
That's always been my problem with those games, is like, they cost an inordinate amount of money. And then it's like, oh gosh, now I got to find like a group of players for this thing. So, and I'm even having trouble with Federation Commander. You know, the kind of like low fidelity version of Starfleet Battles. And like, God forbid, try to find somebody that plays Starfleet Battles around here. But but even that, you know, it's like, because I bought the whole set, and it's like awesome. Yeah. Hey, I just stuck a link in the chat for you guys. It's actually to the Star Frontiers game that TSR did back in the day, and it's a digital remaster of it. They're all free PDFs you can download, which is pretty great. I cut my space teeth on Star Frontiers. It was pretty great. There's a race that's actually like a space amoeba that they're just like a blob, and they can grow limbs when they need them and stuff. They're pretty cool. it's TSR, so it's D&D in space. Sort of, but it does have a D% mechanic system and everything, which was kind of cool. I would say, like, my favorite RPG of all time is Sky Realms of Jeroen. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's, oh god, it's awesome. There was a video game for it as well, back in the mid-90s. It was like a side-scrolling adventure thing that was not good. Not good at all. But the
Sky Realms of Jorn?
Jeroen,
J-O-R-E-N-E. Oh yeah, Jeroen. I see it.
Yeah,
okay.
The art in that is just absolutely amazing, and it was Miles Teves, however you say his name, and I forget the other guy that were in it. And they've since moved on to big money Hollywood stuff, but that was their original like thing together, was making that, and it came out in so many different versions of it. The original, it was like a box set. It had kind of three real thin books in it. But the story was basically that humanity, we sent our first colony ship to this planet, you know, and it would be like Pandora and Avatar, right? We sent our ship and it went there, but there's some sort of electromagnetic field around the planet that screws up spaceships. So it crashed, and the survivors of that encounter the native life. And there's other races that are on the planet as well, who had also come there and crashed, and they're survivors of their own crashes. And it's just kind of how humanity tries to get a foothold there, and then we go to war against the indigenous population, and it turns into germ warfare, where we actually murder them. And there's like a few that are left. But this field around the planet is actually it gives people magical powers, some people, and it mutates them. So you sort of have wizards in this, except that it's a planetary field that does it. So then they have like weather systems that are based on the nine moons of the planet, and you know which moons are waxing and waning is which kind of magics are more powerful that day, and just crazy stuff. Yeah, it's awesome to read it. I'll have to see if there's something online to read about that, because
I remember the video game now called Alien Logic.
Yep, that's it.
I remember seeing that in the store. I've never played it, though, but it looks pretty nifty.
The game's not good. All the background material and everything, I will say even the game system of the old game is not really that good. But all the background material, basically what I'd really love to see is somebody take all of that source material, convert it over to something that's sane, that's a D20 system, and it would be beautiful.
Well, since we're throwing them out there, my favorite RPG system that I've ever played is Heavy Gear.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Which is the mecha, you know, Terra Nova type, you know, mecha RPG with a miniature system. So good. I love mechas that can use swords and knives. It kills me.
I left out an important one.
What was that?
I left out an important one that I just remembered that I played. Traveler, the original Traveler.
I've never played that. Someone sent me some of the books to read, and they're crazy. Is that the one where you could die while you're creating a character, like your character?
It is.
Yeah, there's an Apple game that came out in like the late 70s called Space that used like the exact same system. Like it was so close that I think they got sued by the Traveler people. But yeah, I had like four characters die while they were in training.
While they were in training, yep. Always annoying.
So yeah, I've never actually played the pen and paper role playing game, and I've played like some weird unlicensed computer offshoot of it. It was just really strange, but kind of awesome at the same time. So many good role-playing games out there, though. I wish they would take more of them and make them into computer games. Because Steven, do you have a group around you that you can play RPGs with? Because I don't. You know, I wish I did.
I have a very small group. Just no more than two players. But, you know, it's better than having nobody, you know.
Yeah. Have you ever tried playing online? Because I know there are a good deal of people that do use like tabletop simulators and stuff like that to play online, which seems kind of defeating the point.
Yeah. You know? I haven't actually tried an online group. I have heard of folks who do try to play stuff online. You know, people like using the Vassal engine and that sort of thing. But yeah, I haven't actually checked them out at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That just seems like really cold to me. Like, let's play over the phone. Yeah. You know, that's what it seems like to me anyway. Well, this seems like a good time to wrap it up because I'm getting a little tired and rambly.
Yeah, my wife's tried to call me a couple times saying, "No, oh, girl, I want to bring the kids home."
Oh, sorry.
Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
But Steven, it was a real pleasure to talk to you because I was very excited to find out about these RPGs. And folks, I'll put the link in the show, in the episode post. But you can just go to lulu.com and look up Steven Rogers, and his stuff will come up. And the PDFs are all free. They're definitely worth a read. And if you like them, buy the books because the books, the printed versions, they will look nice on your shelf, if nothing else. But you'll want to sit there on the cam like I did and read them because they're definitely good. They're definitely great reading. Even if you never play the games, just having that source material available just to read and enjoy is just a delight. It's like even if you never play, it's like you have like a little encyclopedia of the universe right there, you know, a little guide. So it's awesome even in that respect. So, Steven, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
And thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. And, Jim, thank you for being an awesome co-host as always. Have a good night, everyone, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.